Once there was a prince who was on the verge of inheriting his father's kingdom and becoming the king. After many years of training, study, and apprenticing his father, the wise elders of the kingdom deemed him ready for the role of king. His only hesitation was he was single. He wanted to reign with a partner by his side. He wanted to marry. So far, all the eligible young women that he had met at court did not stir his heart or his soul. He wanted to marry for love and friendship. One day he was riding through the marketplace when he was struck by the sight of the girl who sold beautiful and sturdy pottery at one of the stalls. It was her eyes that captivated him first. They were kind and sparkled with fun. They were thoughtful as well. In fact, he found that looking into them was like looking into the depths of a clear, deep well. There were shadows and sunlight there. He began to observe how she treated her customers with respect and fairness, yet always struck a good bargain for her family business. He saw the steadiness and fine detailed creativity of her work during times when customers were scarce, throwing pots at her potter's wheel and painting those ready for the kiln. Needless to say, he fell in love. "How shall I approach her, get to know her, let her get to know me?" thought the prince. As a prince, he could simply order her to marry him. But he wanted to marry for love. He could arrive at the door of her humble home in his regal uniform on a fine horse bearing gifts and sweep her off her feet. But he wanted to marry for friendship and shared values, not because he was a prince that could offer a life of rich luxury. Perhaps he could disguise himself as a daily labourer and get to know her at the marketplace. Then when they were in love and ready to marry, he could reveal his true identity. But he did not want to marry out of manipulation. After much contemplation and with his growing love for the young woman as a guide, the prince finally made a decision. He would renounce his claim to the throne. He would move into the neighbourhood in which she lived and begin work as a carpenter, for he had been trained in architecture and in the fine art of carving in his studies. He loved the feel of wood in his hands. He knew he would get to know all the people in her community, go to mass with them, make music at parties with them, help build their houses, shop with them in the marketplace. In this way, he hoped he would become the young woman's friend and someday confess his love for her. And that is what he did. Although the name for today is Christ the King Sunday, and it's a recent invention in the church calendar, it's an opportunity to consider what power means within the Christian community. Caught in the world where the power of the church was beginning to wane, and with the rise of Stalin and Hitler, the papal encyclical of Pope Pius XI in 1925 offered brave and challenging words to state control and declared that only Christ was king of human life. Through service and servitude, people were invited to see the grace of God and to be challenged and inspired to live lives that followed similar paths. What we have as a naming of a Sunday today began as a holiday, drawing people into an eternal understanding of the power of unconditional love, an opportunity in a world where power is made manifest in the control of others to look to a God whose power is about lifting up those who could be ignored or abused by earthly forms of leadership. Our readings this morning offer four understandings of what it means to hold power in the lives of those around, or who choose to follow their leaders. Our first reading from Daniel acts as an amplification of an understanding of Messiahship that we need to hear if we are to more fully understand our Gospel readings. It is the Gospel of John that offers all four perspectives of leadership. And as we're drawn into the dialogue between Pilate and Jesus, we're never entirely sure whether their conversation is political or theological. Within the conversation between Pilate and Jesus, four images of kingship play across each other. As a Roman governor, Pilate has knowledge of what he understands as leadership and power from his world. As the governor in Israel-Palestine, he's been working within a framework of ensuring peace within the region by allowing Herod to act as a puppet king. As the ultimate power, the Romans could have had a guard in every community and wielded their own special means of control. However, the Herodian family has an unusual role. Perhaps as a way of using Roman soldiers elsewhere in the world, Caesar, through the Roman governor, offers local power and instead uses Herod to maintain local control. While Herod's not mentioned in our reading today, that notion of Jewish leadership underlies the passage. Herod had been an effective leader, although his form of leadership was not always kind. Kingship for Herod was about people recognizing his power. His death declared his power as a mountain fort was built to encourage people to revere him long after he had gone. His life spoke of wielding power with 10 wives and the favorite one murdered because he thought she was faithful, and then the murders of his own sons. As well as his reported cruelty, he was also known for his building projects undertaken in his 34-year reign, building of Caesarea, Masada, and the rebuilding of the temple. Facing a Jew, Pilate knows and makes the listener aware of a Jewish understanding of leadership. He would have been aware of the stories of a promised Messiah, a king who would come from the house of David and restore the people of Israel to their promised land. As we heard the reading from Daniel, we will have heard it with our Christ-focused ears and placed Jesus into the vision as the Son of Man who will restore the people to the Ancient of Days, to the Eternal God. However, the reading from Daniel is apocalyptic, and while written about some future vision, it speaks to the time in which it was written. The full vision speaks of four beasts destroying the earth, and these represented the successive oppressive regimes that the people of Israel had endured. The language of a promised Son of Man who will restore them was there to nourish the imagination for faithful people and to give them hope. Perhaps it continues to do so. The final image of a king is provided by Jesus, who is neither a puppet king nor a dynastic ruler, but instead a king of truth and love. In this scene of Pilate and Jesus, we have to wonder who is in charge as the conversation unfolds. Did Pilate feel at a loss with what took place in the room? As Jesus is brought before him, Pilate has all the power of Rome at his hands. This man may not need to be tried in a Roman court or dealt with according to Roman law, but in this land, in this time, Pilate holds all the power. Jesus instead enters the room as the least powerful. He's been betrayed and abandoned by his friends, tried and found guilty by a biased Jewish court. All hope could be lost. Yet the conversation sees Jesus maintain his dignity and demonstrate his mastery of any moment. There are no direct answers to the questions put to him. Instead, Jesus allows the question of, "Who do you say that I am?" to be recalled within the dialogue. There's incredulity from Pilate at the notion that Jesus might be a king when even the people do not seem to recognize who he is. Jesus strips back the knowledge of what kingship and leadership should be. He proclaims a different kingdom to the one that people were used to or people expected. The reign of God is not about personal wealth or reward at the cost of the dignity of humanity. Instead, the heavenly kingdom reveals the truth of God's love, a truth that could only be revealed in the humbling of the Son of God, so that those most ignored, despised, and abused might be brought into the sight of the world. The terrorist threats of last weekend have continued throughout this week. Communities in Brussels will not meet for worship this morning for the fear. And there's been much debate at how governments across the world should respond to the ongoing atrocities being committed by ISIS. This week has also seen a call by some inviting British Muslims to speak out against what is happening, in a mistaken belief that every follower of Islam carries a terrorist ideology. That action in itself speaks of one form of power trying to take control of another. This morning, we're challenged to think about the kind of power we wield as we claim to be followers of Christ. Is the status we value found in wealth and recognition? Or instead, do we seek out those who need to be acknowledged and lift them into the presence of God with love? The story at the beginning of the sermon is a Søren Kierkegaard story, and it suggests that if we are to truly inspire others to recognise the God within each of us, then it comes in the simple living that allows others to discover love for themselves. There's a beautiful video that's been circulating the internet this weekend, and if you watch Russell Howard, and I would suggest you don't. It was shown on Tuesday night, of a wee boy and his father being interviewed in Paris. It's a beautiful interview where the interviewer asks the child what has happened, and he says, mean people did this. And because of this, we're going to have to move. And his dad turns to him and says, we're not going to have to move. This is our home. And the wee boy says to him, but daddy, the mean people have guns. And the dad says, but we have flowers. And the boy, but what do flowers do to protect? We have flowers. And the boy looks at the flowers being laid and he says, and the candles are there to remind us. And the wee boy looks at them, and there's a beautiful wee smile comes on his face as he looks at his dad. And he says, and the flowers and the candles, they will protect us. And the dad says, they will protect us. And it's the sight of the love in that wee boy's eyes that I think asks the interviewer to ask him again, how do you feel now? You feel safe and protected because the flowers and the candles. The power of love to overwhelm fear. We're not here to persuade or overpower, but instead to live by love, that others may know love and respond with love to the world that they meet. Amen.